This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe. And welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, recently retired Adrian O'Coin is going to join us. He hung up his skates officially earlier this week. He hasn't played yet this season, but he hung up his skates officially. He's going to join us to talk about his career that saw him play 1,108 NHL games. Coming up at the top of the next hour, Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver Province is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the Vancouver Canucks. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Richie, Ezra, good evening to both of you. We start this evening with what I'm calling the helmet hullabaloo, because I couldn't think of another word that started with H there that was alliterative.
That's not bad, actually.
Thank you.
I like that.
I've heard
helmet,
better.
Helmet hullabaloo.
Yeah.
It's
not a gate.
Good.
As long
yeah.
as it's not a gate.
Yeah.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, hullabaloo is kind of like a funny word.
Yeah.
Right? And this whole, you know, I don't even know what you call it. It's definitely not a gate, but this whole, let's say, event that's not going to take place. I mean, I can't take it too seriously. I mean, we're talking about an idea that was floated out there to have fun.
I think that's exactly the problem.
Well, you're not taking it too seriously, but the Winnipeg Jets organization certainly is taking it. I'm shocked at how seriously they're taking it and how strong their comments were in disavowing the event earlier today was. For the life of me, I was just absolutely blown away at how strong their reaction was against this event.
Right, and not only do they not want this event to happen, it seems like they're saying, we don't want anyone in the media, whether it's radio or TV or print, doing this type of thing. I mean, we know that it's Dave Wheeler from 92 City FM, and Dave Wheeler also, you know, works for the Winnipeg Jets, and it was an idea of his to have fun. And, I mean, it's something that, you know, I think at the time he maybe wasn't aware of how serious it was going to be. But, I mean, it was True North that really had to come out and squash it because it was gathering so much steam. And, you know, sure, it probably would have been a fun idea. But the fact of the matter is the Jets don't want other people proposing events in their own arena. And really, yeah, sure, it was going to be fun. But they obviously didn't see the fun in it, like you said.
You know, regardless of how much steam it was gathering, and I'm not sure it was gathering as much steam as the Jets would have you believe based on today's reaction.
No, I think it was, Drew.
James Duthie retweeted, so did Pierre LeBrun.
I think it was. I mean, a lot of people, we had friends of ours that were planning on going to the game with hats that said party helmet and stuff like that. So people were having fun with it, and people were looking forward to it. And
I think this is my opinion on it. I mean, again, watching the Hawks game and the Jets play in Chicago, I thought the event, what happened, you know, it's just so rare, right? How often does the glass fall out, you know, glass fall out into the fence? Twice a year?
Maybe.
Three times a year? Twice, maybe via hits, maximum. Sometimes the glass will shatter based on a slap shot or a puck. Anyhow, that happens so rarely. The players in this league, as opposed to the NBA, even the NFL, but probably the most the NBA, doesn't really have access. The players, the fans don't really have access to the players because of the glass.
Sure. And that's why anytime it happens, it's a big event.
Exactly. So, you know, I think it's an exception rather than the rule. You watch the game, you know, should that fan have thrown beer on party? Obviously not.
Yeah.
And then that was ridiculous. The helmet thing, I thought it was funny. I mean, you're worried, oh, it'll happen all the time. Not going to happen all the time because the glass is there. They never can touch the player. So the guy was just trying to be funny, pulled the helmet off, party didn't overreact and kind of thought it was funny. And then, to me, the reason this became so big is because this day and age, every sports station out there needs to put together their content filler.
Top 5.
Yeah, their top 10 list. So they need to go find more things, crazy crowd happenings. Dennis Rodman kicking the cameraman. Ron Artest invading the crowd. Mike Milbury going and swinging his shoe around. They just want to play old stuff because that's what... As much as I don't like it, I think top 10 lists are ridiculous, it gets ratings. Top 10 lists online get ratings. I'd rather see an interesting interview, but that's not what the media has become these days. It's become short attention span, that stuff. So that's why I think it became so big. People want to talk about the newest thing. So this is what happens. That gets blown out of proportion. And to me, it was something that probably won't happen again, or likely even in the event that the glass fell out, the fans in that situation had to be that inebriated and had to have the guts to do it. It likely won't happen again. Right. Okay? So my next, to me, promoting an event, I don't really care what the reason for the promotion is, but in this situation, if you can promote an event that can raise money for charity, or to me specifically, Drew, and I give you credit for this, raise money for equipment for underprivileged kids, because let me tell you, hockey is damn expensive to play, is only becoming more expensive, and is only becoming more elite. If that is what you can do, and you get a dry cleaner on to agree to do it, to clean off the equipment you're getting for free as part of an initiative.
You're talking about the Pass It Forward program.
That's right. Something like that, exactly, people are involved in, Kalen Qualley is involved in. If something like that could have come from this, which I think it could have, then I think there was an error in judgment in not promoting it because people could have benefited from it.
I agree with you that it was a missed opportunity. This is my biggest problem with how the Jets handled it. First of all, I think they blew it way out of proportion. Nobody else did. And secondly, this is a missed opportunity in my books. You know how you handle this opportunity? You say, we're going to hand out a foam helmet to everybody that comes into the building tomorrow night. We're going to give out 10,000 foam helmets.
By the way, I should have continued, and I agree with that. You know, you want to hand out the foam helmets as opposed to have people randomly wear. I don't think people wearing helmets is an issue anyways, but I like that idea better.
Sure. Give out 10,000 foam helmets to the first 10,000 people through the doors, or you give out paper crowns, or you give out whatever.
Yeah.
And you make fun of it, and you make it a situation where, it's, like you said, you try and raise a little bit of money, and you say to the Blackhawks organization, you know, we're going to challenge you, you know, to do the same thing when the Jets play in Chicago next, you know, which is coming up sometime later on this year. You know, you make something out of it, and you maybe build
and you
a
both raise money for charity.
Exactly, you both raise money, and maybe you make a tradition out of it. You know, the first time the Jets play in Chicago, and the first time Chicago plays in Winnipeg each year, it's helmet night. And you keep raising money because, to me, it just seems like they're looking at it out of such a short-sighted view. Because let's say 10 years down the road from now, and the Jets and the Blackhawks are still in the same division, and maybe you know they don't have 15,000 season tickets sold 10 years down the road, and they only have 11,000, and you require walk-up tickets to be sold. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that early November game that, you know, might not get as big of a walk-up crowd 10 years from now. Well, that's Helmet Night, and we love Helmet Night. We remember the first Helmet Night. And 10 years down the road, you can still be raising money, and you can draw attention to it just like,
even
you know,
if you don't raise money down the line, Drew, you have that kind of commemorative game.
Tuxedo Night like it used to be against the Montreal Canadiens. Uh-huh. It's just an easy opportunity to, you know, put a little bit of excitement behind what can be a very dull game this year and in future years, and I don't for the life of me understand the fury at which the Jets responded to this idea. I thought it was relatively harmless at best. I don't think that they were planning on ridiculing the guy in Chicago, or that this was, you know, embarrassing the Blackhawks organization.
Yeah, to that point, Drew, I think that seems to be a little bit of the reason for this. I mean, the guy gave to the charity they mentioned, and again, so he gave to the charity, and so he got suspended for a couple of games. So be it. He'll be back. I'm sure he's a season ticket holder, I believe. And the charity's benefit, and Adam Party was pretty chill about it. And I don't know. I mean, don't we need kind of good promotion in terms of hockey, and not only, well, obviously in Canada, but in the United States?
Well, and another thing, you know, John McDonough, who's the president and governor of the Chicago Blackhawks, came to them from the Chicago Cubs. And he's known as a marketing guy. That was his background. That's why the Blackhawks hired him, is because he was such a good marketer. And because you got to remember, the Blackhawks, 5 years ago, before they started becoming perennial Stanley Cup contenders.
Sure, you can try and connect you can try and say there's a correlation between John McDonough and the Blackhawks' success, or you can the correlations with Toews and Kane.
I'm saying that McDonough came to the Blackhawks organization. One of his mandates was trying to get people back in the building,
mm-hmm.
and so this is a guy who isn't going to necessarily the Blackhawks to me don't seem like the world's most uptight organization. I don't know them from anything, but if you call them up and say we want to take this supposedly ugly incident, I don't know how ugly it really is, but we want to take this embarrassing incident and we want to make something good happen as a result of it. Who loses in that situation?
The only ugly part of it is, I don't know the fan's name, but let's call him Drunk Helmet Guy.
Sure.
drunk Helmet Guy.
As opposed to Drunk Radio Guys right now.
It only reflects badly on Drunk Helmet Guy. It doesn't reflect badly on anyone else. I mean,
I don't even think it reflects badly on him anymore. He's done what he can. He made the donation. He's apologized. I don't think anybody remembers his name. I don't remember his name. You don't remember his name.
Remus does, apparently.
So the point that I was trying to make was the only person that this reflects badly on is the guy that put the helmet on, mm-hmm. and the woman who poured the beer on Adam Party. Now, as far as we could sit here and debate this, and I agree with you, and I think we're all on the same side of this, that this could have been something fun. If you would have allowed fans to wear foam helmets or real helmets or whatever, I think would have been fun. People could have wrote hashtag party helmet, but yeah. True North has come out and they've said they want no part of this. And I personally think it could have been fun, but they've made their decision and there's nothing really we can do about it, is there?
Let me also just kind of get to, I think, the greater root of the issue. And that is fun. And at the end of the day, sports are fun.
Sure.
It's not your job. It's not life or death. It's fun.
Yeah.
I still think, by the way, that people are going to find a way to put plastic cups and plastic things and write shirts and make signs. People are still going to have fun with it.
You know how they're going to find a way to do it? I'm looking at a picture of it. I just retweeted it on our Illegal Curve Twitter account. The popcorn container shaped in a helmet that the Winnipeg Jets sell in their concession stands.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but people will do what they're going to do. The root issue again for me is it fun? Is sports supposed to be fun?
Yep. Well, it's supposed to be fun for fans, Richie.
You're right. And you know what? And to that point, these games are expensive. And I appreciate the working person, whether it's a corporations who buy the tickets, whether it's a working family who buys the tickets, whatever it may be. Tomorrow's game is, I believe, an A game. And an A game in the lower bowl is upwards of $200. And if the fans... And this is kind of what the fans want. Then to me, I really don't see the safety issue. Then to me, it's a lot of money to pay to not allow the fans to have that fun. And if they would enjoy it, I mean, I don't see many fans not enjoying it. So it gets back to taking it a little bit too seriously, curbing that fun, and I think curbing a rivalry a little bit. And the other thing is, this team right now. For a second here, this team right now is kind of spinning their wheels, and it would be a nice little refreshing excitement in the arena, and there's always great fans, but a nice little excitement and refreshing in the arena to have this going on, because the fans will be more engaged. So I think the fans will likely be less engaged on Thursday than they would have been had the promotion gone on. And to me, if engaged fans correlate, whether you believe that to be or not, with success, with more winning hockey, then maybe it's not a good decision. Because at the end of the day, Mark Chipman pointed out that wins are the most important.
Sure.
And maybe this would have actually helped wins. Maybe it wouldn't have, but I think it's certainly up for debate.
Well, there's a reason why there used to be a whiteout.
There's a reason why home teams win more than road teams.
Sure. I mean, it's called home field advantage, and any sort of boost that can be, that can be garnered from a promotion. I mean, why are the Jets having Andre Pavlik bobblehead night?
Mm-hmm. Right, because people at the end of the day, Drew, want to have a fun. People want to have a fun time when they go to the game. They want to have a beer. They want to laugh with their friends. They want to put a jersey on. Sure. They want to put, their hat, their toque, whatever. And, From the people that we've heard from on Twitter or in person, people are a little bit disappointed because, as we said, people were looking forward to getting into this. And, hopefully when an idea comes like this, when an idea comes around like this again, as you mentioned before, maybe they can alter it and still have fun with it and still make sure that all the fans are safe and the players as well.
I just think it's a missed opportunity. And you know what jumped out to me is the Jets, I thought when they were going to disavow this, because I suspected, you know, last week we were talking about it, when Philly was in town, we were talking about it. And we said to the Philly writers, the Jets aren't going to have anything to do with this. And I thought that they were going to use the safety issue as the excuse. And they didn't even use the safety issue. If they said it's a safety concern, yeah, sure, I can maybe
There's
buy
no
it.
Other reason why you don't do it then. What's the other reason? I mean, sure, I guess when fans are wearing hard helmets versus whatever else they have on their head, mainly nothing or a ball cap, I guess there's that concern. But you would have to think
beer at the game.
Well, no. I'm not justifying True North's decision. I'm just saying that safety has to be the main issue there.
But they didn't even say safety. I'm using True North's words. They didn't say a word about safety.
I just think, you know, I thought that it was blown out of proportion, the incident, as I said earlier in the segment. And I think overall, this has kind of just been a very odd situation. You could have charity benefit. You can maybe even benefit as a team because of the crowds being so engaged. And those, I think, are missed opportunities. You know, at the end of the day, I don't know how much of a big deal it is, but it's just odd when you have a excited fan base over a team that hasn't been playing well.
This team lost to Calgary on Monday. They should do everything in their power to avoid the attention.
You know, Drew, I just keep reiterating, you know, it's expensive and it's fun. And that's, to me, what it's all about, having a good time. I mean, you know, people want to see, I've always said, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose exciting. If they're going to lose on Monday, they might as well lose an exciting game like that.
Sure.
Well, if you're going to play against Chicago, who's handled you quite easily in two games, if you're going to lose to a team like Chicago, you might as well lose and have fun in the process.
Couldn't say it better myself. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Coming up in a few minutes' time, Adrian O'Coin is going to join us to discuss his playing career, which just came to an end earlier this week, officially. In the meantime, want to talk, you know, I was sitting down earlier today when I was doing the show plan. I was looking at the conference standings.
Drew, hold on. I thought we were going to talk about the Arcade Fire dress code.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah, let's go. Let's talk standings here.
What kind of band puts out a dress code?
Sorry, we're not talking about that. Let's go.
You brought it up.
I was kidding.
He was being tongue-in-cheek, I would suspect there. I can't believe. I mean, we know that there's been times when one conference in the NHL is stronger than the other.
Have you watched the NBA the past 10 years?
Well, sure. But to see that in the
NHL... Good, because I haven't.
To see that in the NHL, and to see the disparity between the two conferences right now in the NHL, just absolutely blows my mind away. And you know, I got a couple of the numbers here. You know, 8th place team in the West, the Minnesota Wild, have 30 points so far this year. They're better than the 1st place team in the East, Boston Bruins, with 29 points.
But to that point quickly, because everybody keeps saying Boston wouldn't be in the playoffs if they were in the West. No.
They would.
Boston is far better than a couple of those teams.
Sure, okay. Fine. But I mean, just looking at the raw numbers of it all, I mean, the 12th place team in the West is the Nashville Predators. They have 22 points. If they were in the East, they'd be in a playoff spot, given that the New York Rangers are in 8th currently with only 20 points. To me, I just can't figure out, and I'll let you, give me your opinion. Why is the West so much better than the East so far this year?
Well, I don't think that you can point to one thing, but let's back up for a second. I think that what's happening this year, early on, we're past the quarter mark of the season, right? Or as Drew likes to call it, the quarter pole of the season.
No, it's not the quarter pole.
Okay, quarter mark. I was kidding. I was just trying to see if you were awake, Drew.
I was awake.
So this year, Richie, the Western Conference is... It's laughable how bad the teams in the Eastern Conference are struggling. Now, I think that's going to normalize. I don't think that it's going to be this bad. I do think that the Western Conference is going to remain the better conference, because if you look at some of the teams that are rebuilding in the East, you know, whether it's the Buffalo Sabres, the Florida Panthers, who have already made moves coaching, Philly is starting to come along, but they weren't doing very well. But if you look at 3 of the last 4 Stanley Cup winners, so you're talking the Hawks twice, and the LA Kings. So this isn't a new thing, right? The Western Conference has been dominating The Stanley Cup for the last 4 years. And sure, it's been close with Vancouver losing to Boston, and that went far. But so the Western Conference has been stronger than the East for a long time. And if you're thinking of, you know, why that is, does it have to do something with, you know, geographic locations or, you know, the kind of the cycle that we're in, Richie?
Right.
But if you actually look at a lot of the teams that are doing well in the West, and St. Louis is one of them, Chicago is another one of them, and then you have other teams that are coming along, and then Winnipeg is back in the West. But Chicago is a team that struggled big time for many years, and we're going to talk to Adrian O'Coin right away. When he was there, they couldn't draw flies. They weren't doing very well. But now in the Western Conference, Chicago is kind of the team year after year. They've almost become like the new Detroit, and now Detroit's gone to the East, and you know everyone thought that they were going to do well. But I don't, you know, to answer your question, it's not something that you can easily answer, because right now the West is just better, you know, quite simply. The teams in the West are better. There's more teams. You know, you pointed out the stats. A team like the Nashville Predators or the Jets, for that matter, who are 11th and 12th in the West, they're going to be in tough big time to make the playoffs. You're in a situation where you might have to get 100 points to get into the West right now. No, I would say that the West...
107 after 20 games, 107 points in the Western Conference would not get you into the playoffs.
So even more than 100, when usually it's about 96. Remember, it was about that last year in the East, for sure. Probably similar to that in the West, Richie. But I think the competition in the West has made the teams even better when you have a Central Division unbelievable.
I think that's absolutely true. As I think, you know, you play up to that kind of competition level. And, you know, for example, if you're a team like the Rangers in the East, you know that you don't have to panic because of the conference. I think that does affect your play. Now, I think overall it's just the trends of the NHL to go back and forth and back and forth. Or, you know, the West seems to be better. I mean, the NBA, it's been better for a long time. You know, NFL, you'll see the trends. And in baseball, it's harder because they don't play each other as often. But, you know, from a Winnipeg perspective, the Jets benefited greatly from playing in a weaker conference and especially weak division. So now that's kind of evening out a little bit. But these things do have a way of evening that out. You know, when a team becomes a powerhouse, however, they are a powerhouse for a fairly long time, right? Mm-hmm. Chicago can be a powerhouse for 10 years. Detroit's been for like 20 years. But Boston will be a powerhouse. And, you know, who gets the top picks? Who gets Connor McDavid? That'll be another powerhouse. And, you know, for all the talk about the West, 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 I mean, there's still Pittsburgh, still Boston, there's still Detroit. I mean, these aren't teams that everybody's champing at the bit to get a hold of, Drew.
Well, you mentioned Pittsburgh and Boston, and Drew, I do think Richie's onto something there. There's a cycle in pro sports. That's why there's, you know, the emerging team cycle. There's the team that's there's the contender, if you want to break it down to that, right? The rebuild, the team that's on the cusp, and then the team that's a contender, if you want to put it like if there's three parts of the cycle or whatever. But I have to go back to, and this is kind of to Richie's point, look at Chicago and L.A. L.A. was really bad for a long time. Like, we're talking a long time. And Phoenix was bad for a long time. Now, L.A., Phoenix, Chicago, those are teams that you expect to be in the playoffs, and they, with maybe the exception of Phoenix, you expect Chicago and L.A., they could be back in the Western Finals again this year. So I don't think that there's a huge gap. And you know what? I think something that's important to note here, there's less teams in the West. So there's more dominant teams in the West with less teams to choose from. So it's just really, I think it's something that's really fascinating about the NHL this year. Yeah, there's lots of parity. And I don't think you can say that one team is hands above any other team. You could maybe point to Chicago, Pittsburgh, but those teams aren't exactly as dominant as they were in previous years. I would chalk it up to cycle. And I know the cycle we're in, and I know you could probably get into coaching and the superstars and all that are in each conference. But I think it just so happens that we're in the cycle where some of the better teams are coming out of the West.
So strictly just a cyclical thing in your mind, Richie?
I think so, Drew. I mean, you always hear about the style, a little bit more open in the East, a little more tight checking in the West, and it's not like you move conferences and suddenly you change the way you play, really. I mean, at least I don't think. I mean, maybe the Jets are a little more passive than they were last year, or tight checking as they were last year. I don't know. But, like, I don't think that these boundaries actually really matter. You're playing the other team twice. So you're playing teams in the other division of your conference with three times, and you're playing the other teams in the other conference twice.
Yeah.
Is that a big difference? Like, seriously. I mean, does that change everything? I mean, to me, it doesn't. You build, you're going to build based on what's in your division and such, but I don't really think it's anything. And I know people are talking about it a lot, and it's a lot more difficult. But, you know, in 2 years, it might be the opposite way. Or maybe more like 4 or 5 years.
I think it – I mentioned it, you know, 5 minutes ago. But I think it's just – it's really kind of a neat thing that you have a conference that's this dominant. I can't remember. I mean, do you go back to the late 80s maybe with the Oilers and the Flames and how good those teams were when there was the disparity and the Western Conference had the edge? Because then you could go back to the East and you could say all those good Pittsburgh teams right in the early 90s. So right. It's exciting to watch. But Richie's right. There's defensive teams in the East. There's defensive teams in the West. So I think, you know, all in all, the game is strong. It just so happens there's some better teams in the West right now.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Adrian O'Coin. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome to NHL Midweek Adrian O'Coin, who announced his retirement after 17 years in the NHL earlier this week. Adrian, thanks very much for joining us this evening, and first and foremost, congratulations on a terrific career.
Thanks so much.
Adrian, we wanted to start with your first team in the NHL, that being, of course, the Vancouver Canucks. You debuted in Vancouver in 1995. What was it like to come into the NHL with a Canucks team that had just made a run to the Stanley Cup final?
Oh, it was pretty amazing. I mean, there was still a lot of buzz in Vancouver. You know, there weren't too many rookies on that team. It was, I think, you know, in the old days when I started playing, there was only like maybe one or two guys who get called up almost a year. There wasn't that much of a turnover. Young guys, you know, they had to really put their time in. You know, that's a credit to young kids nowadays. They just, you know, they train so much harder. They're so much more knowledgeable about the game. But going up to Vancouver then was, it was really special. You know, they treated me really well. A great group of guys, especially the D-Core there that I got brought up with was a real treat for me.
Adrian, when you started off your career, well, actually later on for the Vancouver Canucks, but when you were in Vancouver, you played under Iron Mike Keenan, and then later on in your career, you played for the Calgary Flames under Mike Keenan as well. What's your best Mike Keenan story that you can share with us?
Ooh, I got a lot of them. I got a lot of Mike Keenan stories. No, you know what? I don't know about stories, but the one thing I loved about Mike is that he never wanted anyone to be too comfortable. And it didn't matter if you were the best player in the league or the worst player in the league. And he had such a reputation of stirring stuff up when he came into a new team and changing things. And what he would do is just make sure that everybody knew that it was, you know, you were there to win and to work hard. You know, we would have like sometimes 15-minute practices. But from start to finish, you were working so hard that that's all you could last sometimes at 15 minutes. And he had some great tactics. You know, he would come in with sticks that were half broken and he would smash them. And then sometimes he would, you know, he would basically just kind of time everything to make sure that he had your attention. And, you know, there was definitely a method to everything he did.
Was he the most intimidating coach you ever played for, Adrian?
Well, there's a lot of intimidating coaches, but he was definitely up there. I mean, he demanded a lot from you. And, you know, and if he didn't think he'd get the most out of you, then a lot of times you got traded. So he was definitely good.
You know, later in your career, in the middle of your career, you played on the New York Islanders from 2001 to 2004 and put up some great numbers. You know, what was it like playing on Long Island? I mean, personally, I've been to the arena. I think it certainly carries a history that many arenas don't. Can you talk about your experience playing there? And can you talk about, you know, what your thoughts are on that team moving over to Brooklyn?
Well, I absolutely love my time there. I came in at a great time. They were coming off a whole whack of years of struggling and not making playoffs. Mm-hmm. That summer I got traded to the Islanders, so did Pekka, Yashin. We brought in Osgood off of waivers. You know, and we made playoffs. We had that, in my mind, one of the most fun playoff rounds I've ever seen or been a part of against Toronto, that seven-game series. It was just a real exciting time. And the history, you know, Bobby Nystrom was around, Clark Dilley was around, Billy Smith was our goalie coach. It was, for me, it was awesome because I grew up in the, you know, early 80s watching them play. So that was really exciting. You know, I'm not sure how the transition is going to go to Brooklyn. You know, there are a ton of fans in Long Island who are from the eastern side of Long Island, so that's going to be quite a, you know, quite a trek for them to get out there. But, you know, a new building, Nassau Coliseum was one of my favorite buildings to play in, but, you know, for a fan experience, it wasn't as good as all these new buildings. It was tough to compete that way.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're talking to Adrian O'Coin, who retired after 1,108 NHL games and a total of 399 points. Adrian, after your time in Long Island, you went to Chicago, where you were the 32nd captain in the Blackhawks franchise history. You know, can you talk about playing in Chicago sort of right before the current glory years that the Blackhawks are going through?
Well, it was still, you know, very impressive. I mean, just the, you know, the logo on the jersey, just the organization itself, the history here, you know, the city of Chicago was still, you know, an awesome thing to do. Clearly, you know, we struggled a lot. Personally, I struggled. I had a lot of injuries I had to deal with. It didn't go the way, you know, we had all planned it. You know, we had a team built with really character guys, kind of more suited for pre-lockout hockey with clutch grab and toughness. But then, you know, I couldn't be more proud of the way the team and organization has turned itself around now, because it's amazing, you know, and I think it's so good for the entire hockey world to have young guys like, you know, Taze and Kane and Duncan Keith and Seabrook, who, you know, aren't so young anymore already, but to do what they've done and, you know, obviously to pick up a couple cups on the way has been just amazing.
Adrian, you obviously spent 3 years playing for the Phoenix Coyotes in the desert. The team that lost to the Los Angeles Kings in the Western Conference Finals, how would you compare that team that you played for to other teams in the NHL that you played for?
Well, I think as a group, we just all connected, you know, from general manager down to the trainers, you know, just through and throughout. You know, Tippett runs such a great, great bench. You know, he really doesn't leave any question marks with anybody. Every player knows their role. And we had a great group of guys in the room, and everyone enjoyed it. We had a ton of adversity, you know, outside of the locker room that we did, you know, a reasonably good job of not letting it creep in. And, you know, we played some good hockey, and I think last year, you know, it kind of came to a climax, and the team didn't play so well because, it, you know, it was almost clear today that the team was going to move. And now that it's all settled, you look how good they are now. They really haven't changed that much. Obviously tweaked their roster a little bit, but it's amazing what, you know, good goaltending and strong leadership can get you.
Yeah, Adrian, you had a really long, really good career. Well, what's one or two things that, from the beginning of your career with Vancouver through the end of it with Columbus, that changed most significantly?
You know, I think just the preparation, you know, prior to the NHL for the young guys. I mean, now you look at these kids and you hear a lot about teams rushing kids in the NHL, but you literally have 17, 18-year-old kids now that are more prepared for the NHL than 30-year-old guys were when I played, you know, early on in my career anyways. You know, they know all about health. They know all about rest. They know all about conditioning, nutrition. You know, they know the game. They learn so much more skill. There's just so many, you know, such better teaching out there and coaching and everything for these young guys now. And in turn, it's made the game so much better. Like I said, when I came up, you might have had one or two guys in the minors that had a chance to make in the NHL. Now you have just about every player that not necessarily will be a game breaker or a superstar, but they can all at least play at that level.
Adrian, we can't have you on talking about your career without asking you about the howitzer that you had. When I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, I played defense as well, obviously at an extremely low level. But as a defenseman, I used to look at the shot that you had, and you scored a lot of goals for the Canucks, the Islanders, the Hawks, the Coyotes, all the teams that you played for. You had the hardest shot. You know, is that something that you took a lot of pride in? And what were some of the things that you would work on to make your shot even better? Because I think it was about 150 miles per hour.
Well, yeah, I did take a lot of pride in it. You know, a lot of it just had to be natural ability. I mean, you look at guys who are great skaters, or guys who are really good hitters and scorers. A lot of that is just natural talent. But, you know, I did work on it. You know, I try to teach a lot of the kids now that, you know, shooting comes from a lot of core and a lot of lower body strength. A lot of these kids think it's almost like arm speed and, you know, how quickly you can shoot and strength, but it's really like a total body shot. And I mean, you know, I look back at a lot of the years when I had great power play numbers and stuff, and normally, yeah, it was because I played with these great forwards and great partners that were giving me like really perfect one-time passes and, you know, everything really has to click. You're not going to see too many guys, you know, at any level that can do it all by themselves.
I mean, you popped 23 goals in 1998, 1999, which there's like three goals a game in those years. Adrian, one question I have for you, and some people think that the game is almost overcoached at this point. And I know you played for you know 15 plus years. Do you believe that the game is a little bit overcoached, at least to the extent of defense over offense?
You know, I do agree with that a little bit. I mean, now there's just a stat for everything. I mean, I know. You know, plus minus is such a huge stat. Faceoffs are such a huge stat, and everything's important. And I mean, it really is indicative if you look at the total picture. But you know, one night you might be bad, one night you might be good, and it can go either way. But that's, you know, I think that's why playoff hockey is so good, because all of a sudden everything you've taught over the course of the year almost sometimes goes out the window, and then it's either, you know, you got to, you know, put your money where your mouth is and just play. And, you know, it's just about wins and losses, and that's when the real teams really show up. So it can be said that there's a little bit overcoaching, but I think these coaches nowadays are so much better than just because of the knowledge out there and, you know, just the training tools that you have. So it's, you know, it's only made the game better.
Adrian, throughout your career, you were an active member of the NHLPA. In fact, you were on the negotiating committee during the last season's lockout. You know, why was it important for you to be active in the Players Association, especially last year?
Well, I had pretty much gone to every meeting over the course of the summer since I was a rookie. So I you know, felt like I had quite a bit of NHLPA knowledge. And I think that, you know, it was important to have some older guys there. You know, when I started playing, a lot of the older guys, you know, didn't really show up that much. It was kind of like the middle line guys or the younger guys. And I just think that, you know, it was really interesting to me. Clearly, I didn't know how much longer I was going to play. But, you know, I played with so many great veteran players that I really respected, and they all put their time in, and they fought for lockouts, and they fought for basically, you know, me coming up through the ranks. And, you know, I've had a great life, you know, because of the way they battled for me, and I think I owed it to the young guys.
Did you fear any backlash from ownership as a result of being so active on the Players Association?
No. I think everybody did it in pretty much good, honest fashion. And I don't think I was ever out there, you know, on the line picketing and, you know, saying stuff that wasn't appropriate. And, I mean, I try to tell my I got five kids at home, and I try to tell them, as long as you're being honest and truthful, you know, if someone disagrees with that, that's their problem.
Isn't that the, you know, Adrian, kind of looking at your career, isn't that kind of the ultimate sacrifice? Because a lot of the players that end up having difficulty finding jobs are the players that later on in their career are looking for 1 or 2 year deals, and younger players who may not be as good, like frankly aren't as good, but are on cheaper contracts, sometimes take those jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, I was lucky. I mean, I've pretty much, you know, told the story a few times in the last few months here about, you know, this retirement. It didn't kind of creep up yesterday. You know, it's been kind of an accumulation of the last 4 years. After my contract in Chicago, I was going to be 36, and when I was 32 at the time signing that, I figured that would have been a great career. And then I just happened to go to Phoenix, where everything fell into place, and got an extension there. And even after Phoenix, you know, I thought I was probably done, but then Columbus wanted a veteran guy. And, you know, sometimes, like you see, you get these younger guys who can come in and for cheaper and all this, but in reality, if you have a good core and you have a great dressing room, and if you have old guys that have been around and seen it, you know, some of those pieces are very invaluable. And, you know, it was nice to feel wanted still, and I'm happy that I could help those teams out.
Adrian, we'll let you go on this last question. You're currently working with the Blackhawks organization in player development. Is that something you've been enjoying so far this year? And, you know, what's next for you?
I am enjoying it. I'm actually in Rockford right now. We got a game tonight, so I drove in from Chicago, and with Yannick Perreault, he's taking care of the forwards. And, you know, we're trying to help the team as much as we can and help these young guys, you know, kind of learn how to be NHL players and help them with their skill and their abilities. And after that, I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, definitely spent a lot of time at home. I got five kids, and four of them are playing hockey. I'm trying to coach most of them, and, you know, just doing all the things that I kind of didn't have time for. And it's been a real, you know, exciting change of life for so long anyways.
Professional chauffeur from now on, right, Adrian?
Yeah, well, you know, I can thank my wife for all these years. She definitely ran the show, and it's nice to be able to help her again.
Very nice.
thanks very much, Adrian. That's Adrian O'Coin. We really appreciate you giving your time this evening on NHL Midweek.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adrian. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
What is this?
Coming at ya, CFRW at 1290. Eat, sleep, rave, repeat.
I regret asking immediately.
When I drove to Minneapolis for the Vikings game with Dave, he talked about this. These songs, and it's like they're called EDM or something,
electric dance music.
God, I mean, every song's the same. I don't mean to offend our listeners, but
no, it's awful.
It's like boom, ba-da-boom, and then the music falls, and I feel like I'm watching like. Is that commercial out there? I don't know.
Rich, anyhow. The only problem is, though, Remus keeps playing this. We keep telling him we don't like it.
Yeah, why is he playing it?
But he keeps
song?
Playing it.
You guys told me to before the show.
I never it was clearly song. A joke.
Yeah. Oh, was? Oh, sorry.
Let's go to six things.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
I told Dave last week I never want to hear that song again.
Obviously, you weren't needed to tell Remus that. Richard Pollock, the New York Islanders need to trade for a goaltender immediately. We'll talk about the Islanders a little bit later on, but
Ezra had this as one of his three things a month ago,
yep.
And like it's overdue. Regardless of Nabokov's injury, and he hasn't been playing, Nabokov's done. Like as a starting NHL netminder, so the Islanders go out and they acquire Vanek and they overpay for Vanek. Okay, but the main issue here is goaltending. And they don't have a goaltender. And so what, this is the thing going back to our second segment when you talk about the conferences. The Islanders know. If the Islanders were in the West, they would have traded for a goalie a month ago because they know they would have been done. But because they're in the East, they know they can wait a little bit. But the waiting is done. You know, the waiting is over, as they say, as Gary Thorne says with when the Rangers won the Cup in 94. You have to address the goaltending issue. And if you don't, the season's lost, and it's compounded by the fact that you sacrificed part of the future for the season. So because they traded for Vanek, they almost forced their hand to have to trade for a goaltender, and it may result in an overpay. Whether it be Ryan Miller, they go back to the well with different management in Buffalo, although there's rumors he's going to St. Louis, or whether it be somebody from St. Louis after they get Miller, if that's what happens. It's, you know, something's got to happen quick.
Five.
Sticking with goaltenders, Minnesota Wild goaltender Josh Harding deserves to be in the conversation for a goaltending spot on Team Canada's men's Olympic team roster at the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah, and I'm not the first person to bring it up. A lot of people have been bringing this up over the last couple of weeks. But if you look at his numbers, and I'll just quickly read them off, he's 12-3-2. He's got a 1.38 goals against average, 941 save percentage. He's got two shutouts. The guy is, I would say, the front runner for the Vezina Trophy right now. And he's Canadian, from Ontario. Pardon me, actually, from Regina. Sorry, I got a little ahead of myself.
Yeah, they've got enough success going
on. We're watching the Ottawa Senators here in the studio, so he's from Regina. But you look at the goaltenders, Price is going to be there, Richie. He'll be the number one goalie. Most likely, Luongo will be there as kind of the veteran backup. But if you look at Corey Crawford and Braden Holtby and Mike Smith, has anybody really put themselves ahead of anybody else in that race? I mean, Josh Harding right now, he's never played more than 30 games in his career. And by the way, great story with the fact that he was diagnosed with MS. The guy has played himself into the conversation. I'm not predicting that he'll be picked to the team. He wasn't invited to the orientation camp, but the guy deserves to be in the conversation because we've seen him play the Jets this year, and he's been pretty darn good.
Not yesterday, but to Tezzi's point, the Hawk goalie.
Yeah,
it can be effective. I don't think Harding should play because I've been Carey Price for like.
Do you
three
think
years.
He should be in the conversation? Though
I think he should be in the conversation.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely,
just put him in the conversation,
yeah,
Richie.
Absolutely. I mean, hey, you know, if Mike Smith's been, you know, he had a good year, bad year. I know Harding's never done it before, but hey, it's this season. I mean, the Olympics aren't every 2 years. It's right
by
now.
The way, they're talking about Ben Bishop in the conversation for the U.S.
Sticking with the Minnesota Wild, Richard Pollock, the Minnesota Wild need to add a second pairing defenseman before the playoffs if they want to do anything past round one of the playoffs.
I think at the end of the day, they're going to rely. I know they've split up Brodin and Suter a bit, but they're going to rely on Brodin and Suter, and Suter's going to play 30 minutes a game. But you're dealing with some stiff competition in this division, and with a new format, you have to go through the division, of course, to make it to the Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with a St. Louis team and you're dealing with a Chicago team and a Colorado team that served Chicago last night, you're dealing with a nice mix. Chicago has size and speed. St. Louis has both, but with a lesser skill level. Colorado's not as physical, but very skilled. And you have to have the depth on your back end. And, you know, guys like Jared Spurgeon, Matt Dumba, Scandella, Stoner, I'm going through the back end there, you know, Keith Bauer when he's healthy, those guys all have flaws in their game. They all have a couple things that don't necessarily work. And you can't win in the National Hockey League, at least late into the spring, unless you can defend against the top line. So you can maybe Suter can defend Taves, but Suter probably, but the second pairing,
sure,
whoever that may be, has to be able to defend against different players on that team, whether it be Hossa. Well, it depends on what their lines are going to be. They always switch them up. But
as you get deeper into the playoffs, the competition you face gets better.
Right. I mean, do they put Kane with Taves? But the idea, and also, Drew, to that point, St. Louis, too. I mean, mm-hmm. St. Louis has different lines that can hurt you. Kind of all the same, really.
Right.
At some point. You know, you have to defend against guys, depth players, Jaden Schwartz, Tarasenko. And I have concerns that Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Minnesota team, cannot do that for an extended period of time against a really good team. Three.
Ezzie Ginsberg, Boston Bruins forward Riley Smith may turn out to be the key player that ultimately determines who won the Louis Erickson for Tyler Seguin trade between the Bruins and the Dallas Stars.
Right, and right off the bat, I mean, obviously the players that are going to determine that are the major mm-hmm. players, Tyler Seguin and Louis Erickson, and we've talked about it a lot because that was a big trade that happened this year. But, you know, you look at Riley Smith, and the guy's playing on the third line. He's playing with Chris Kelly, and he's playing with Carl Soderberg, who basically this is his first year in the NHL. But that's a pretty darn good line, and they're doing really well right now. But Riley Smith is a guy that's got a lot of offensive upside, and he's playing really well. He's picked up 13 points so far this season. He's a guy that I really like, and, you know, I think people looked at Riley Smith and they said, you know, he's kind of a throw into this trade, but he's a guy that, you know, is a pretty darn good player himself. Late pick of the Stars, third round, and the guy's pretty good and looks like he's going to play the full year in Boston and he's going to contribute.
Right up against it now, Richard Pollock, in a game that is moving towards speed, the Flyers lack enough of it to make a dent in a weak Eastern Conference.
Yeah, talent-wise, they can beat you, but they're going to have to skate. They're going to have to make three passes to get around you. And they have talent kind of to do that.
Right.
So Knights are going to beat you, like last night in Ottawa. But there are Knights where they're not going to be able to keep up, and it's going to cost them. And they're in a weak conference. But that core is kind of together for a while. And there's some great players in there, but there are some guys who were great players and aren't anymore.
I think Philly makes the playoffs still.
One. Sticking with speed, Ezzie Ginsberg, slow puck movement on the breakout as well as sloppy play in their own zone are major reasons why the Ottawa Senators are struggling right now.
You know, Richie mentions, you know, that the Philly played Ottawa yesterday, and I imagine Richie was watching that game yesterday because I watched the whole game, and right after the Kyle Turris goal was disallowed, the Ottawa Senators completely fell apart. And that's what the problem with the Ottawa Senators is this year. Early on in the year, you're looking at the team of Jason Spezza and Bobby Ryan and Mahalik and Turris and Zibanejad, who was a high pick in 2011. They've got tons of offensive talent. And then you throw in Carlson and the good goaltending. But right now, they're struggling in their own zone. They're playing Minnesota tonight, a tight team. But right now, the Ottawa Senators look slow in their own end. They're coughing up the puck quite a bit. And Mathot and Carlson is a good pairing there. But Weirkoch hasn't been as good as he has, and a guy like Greiba has really struggled mm-hmm. in Ottawa this year. And right now, that's the glaring weakness, because you look at the two goalies they have, they're excellent. And there's tons of offensive talent, but right now, to me, that's something that's got to get better. I don't know if they make a move maybe to bring someone else in, but for me, that's why they're struggling big time right now.
Lots of talk between about the Senators being interested in Michael Delzato of the Rangers, who's been
a healthy
scratch.
Well, he's been coughing up the puck a lot in New York, too. So.
Well, but he can make mm-hmm. a good first pass, so we'll see about that. That's it. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. When we come back, Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province is going to join us to talk about the Canucks. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We sucked. It was easily our worst game of the year. We didn't deserve a point.
How do you explain the third period? Once you got up 2-1, I think you had two shots on goal.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. I wish I could.
How surprised were you with the start tonight? I mean,
it's lack of respect.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. That was Vancouver Canucks head coach John Tortorella last night after the Florida Panthers defeated the Canucks on home ice. We're now pleased to be joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province. Ben, good evening and welcome back to NHL Midweek. How are you?
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
Ben, you look at the Canucks, you look at their record, you look at their roster, and it's hard not to think of them as a team that's on the way down right now. If that is the case, how does that stop and how do they reverse that trend?
Well, I think it's a fair comment. You know, the one thing that's really never gone away in this marketplace is that regardless of who's on the roster, maybe more importantly, who isn't, you know, it's a one-line hockey team. You shut down Henrik and Daniel Sedin, and no matter who's playing with them on a given night, it seems, you know, if they don't go, they don't win. I mean, outside of a big 4-2 win, you know, in San Jose on November 7th, which ended a 9-game losing streak against the Sharks, a night in which the Sedins didn't have to score because they got that rare secondary scoring, the team has gone south. And I was writing today in our paper the fact that this reminded me a lot of when the first time they went back into Boston and had a very vengeful 4-3 win over the Bruins after losing to them in the Stanley Cup final. And they were never quite the same team. Got by on great goaltending, found a way to score. I just thought after the San Jose game recently that they haven't been quite the same team on that road trip, but they went into L.A. and were outmatched and just faded as the game went on. And then lost a game in Anaheim that they probably had no business losing, and then coming home and continuing to go on that side of the ledger. So, yeah, you know, it's fair to say it's a team on the way down because, you know, unlike San Jose or whoever, they haven't remade the team on the fly. They've re-upped a lot of guys to very attractive and favorable contracts for both parties. But the bottom line there is it's a team that's getting older in a hurry and doesn't have that influx of youth that you really need to make hay for a long time.
Ben, you mentioned that the fact that the Canucks are getting older and that they've become more of a one-line team, and I would agree with that, and that's been the criticism of the Vancouver Canucks, that guys like David Booth haven't worked out, even though he's had some injury problems, but then they traded away Cody Hodgson, who looked like he was the heir apparent to being the second-line center. But as far as the top line goes, they were playing pretty well earlier on in the season with Ryan Kessler there, and now they're struggling. What's happened to that top line lately?
Well, they put Kessler up with the Twins on the one road trip. Alex Burrows had fractured his foot in the first game in San Jose, blocking a shot and missed 10 games. So, you know, they're trying to figure, well, what do we do on this road trip out east? It's pretty difficult. And what they did was initially they split up the Twins, put them on different lines. And then on a recent road trip, they decided, well, let's load up the one line and had Kessler up there with the Twins. And then at one point, you know, with the power play struggling, I'm putting four forwards. So the one thing about John Tortorella I give him credit for, he's not afraid to do things that maybe weren't done here in the past. He's not afraid to break up the Twins or to give them ample ice time. I think what's coming home to roost now is that, you know, the Twins were playing 26 minutes a night. You know, they averaged 22 to 23, and they were playing 19 minutes a night last year under Alain Vigneault. And I think what eventually comes into play here is that, you know, sustainability is a real hard thing when you're asked to forecheck as aggressively as the Canucks are. You know, they'll have three guys below the goal line, you know, high risk, high reward, maybe give up the odd man break, then you're expected to hustle back and break up that odd man situation, and then in transition hope to generate a scoring chance. I think a lot of times they're pretty gassed at the end of these shifts, and even though they have nights where they generate a lot of shots, they're not the quality shots, and they don't have the traffic at the net, so it's a little misleading when you see them putting up a lot of shots because it's the kind of shots, and I think fatigue is something that you can talk about, something John Tortorella doesn't want to talk about, but when you're playing that many minutes with an older hockey club, I think it's going to catch up to you.
You know, Ben, you talk about that lack of depth, and you look at the Canucks, you watch Canucks on, obviously you're watching them on a nightly basis, but you look at their third, fourth, fifth, sixth leading scorers. I mean, Mike Santorelli, Chris Higgins, Brad Richardson. I mean, I look at that and say, I mean, how could anybody expect, I mean, Mike Gillis, how could he expect those players? I mean, they're actually producing better than I thought they would. There's a significant gap in talent that, against the, you know, considering the Western Conference and the talent level in the Western Conference, how do they expect to compete?
Well, just, you know, there's a talent level, and then there's also a size issue too. I mean, especially in the Pacific Division with LA and San Jose, they don't physically match up well against those teams. And I think what really hurts them is, you talked about the talent level. I mean, you know, when you get guys through free agency or through waiver claims or whatever, you know, sometimes you're getting somebody else's problem, or you get a guy who eventually is probably going to revert back to form. I mean, Mike Santarelli did everything to earn a spot on this roster, and he had no leverage. He's on a two-way contract, and, you know, with their injury situation, was actually playing second-line center until Burrows came back, and then they moved Kessler into the middle, and, of course, last night they had him back on the wing. But, you know, after 20 games, I'm of the mind that when you get a quarter way into the season, these guys kind of revert back to who they are. And Santarelli has one goal in his last 18 games, and Richardson has one goal in his last 10. You know, they're third or fourth line guys. And in that respect, I think they fit. But, you know, what's happening in your top six? Zach Cassian was supposed to start this season on the top line. He gets the preseason suspension, 3 in the preseason, 5 to start the season. He's already behind the eight ball, a guy who can't afford to miss a practice, let alone a game, to really understand what John Tortorella is trying to accomplish here. And he's basically bagels on most nights, hard pressed for him to get a shot or a hit or whatever. And, of course, you know, David Booth just adds to that mix, having ankle surgery in March and then having groin problems right in the preseason, and hasn't been able to regain the explosiveness. One thing about David Booth, he can always get there, and that's gone missing. And, of course, he was a scratch last night. I don't know what's going to occur here Friday night against Columbus. I would think with the way the team played and the fact that, you know, when you start to worry about the mindset of a hockey club, to me that's just as big a concern as a lack of scoring. You know, where are these guys at? I mean, it's a veteran-laden team. John Tortorella should have to worry about them being ready to play, and they weren't ready to play last night. And he peeled some paint off the wall in the first intermission. And, you know, you've got a guy like David Booth sitting on the outside. Zach Cassian can't get into your top six. They don't have anything on the farm. I mean, Nicholas Jensen, first-round pick, who was really, I thought he might make the team this year and maybe projected as a future second-line winger. Hasn't scored this year for the Utica Comets and has 2 goals in 30 career American Hockey League games. And he remains a project at this point. And that 21 to 24 group, the Canucks just don't have anybody there. And it's starting to hurt him.
I was just going to say, you know, it leads right very well into my next question, Ben. And I mean, you came on our show actually after the Cody Hodgson trade and said, you know, you thought that wasn't a good trade, and you were absolutely right about that. I think we can say at this point that's correct. But the lack of picks, and you mentioned, you know, San Jose and rebuilding on the fly. You know, San Jose is Thomas Hertl, and they can go up and trade for Couture to draft him high up, and they can trade Charlie Coyle and players for Brent Burns. Is that lack of any kind of success of the draft just killing this franchise?
Well, it is, because, I mean, if you look back at the Sharks, they're 2010, 2011, and 2012 first-round picks are playing for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Canucks would kill to have something like that. I'm of the mind, and everybody knows that, you know, you can't build through free agency and trades. You have to build through the draft. And, you know, we beat it to death here in Vancouver that, you know, the 07 draft, when they had an opportunity to draft David Perron, who was putting on a show here at the Memorial Cup, and they passed on him with the 26th pick and took a high school player out of Minnesota who's fallen right off the radar, and Patrick White. It's things like that I don't think you ever recover from as a franchise. You can't blow a first-round pick. And I think that's hurt them, because you look at Perron, he had a four-point night last night. He easily would be in their top six mix today, and people will say, well, that's fine. But, of course, you know, they turned Patrick White into, you know, Christian Ehrhoff because San Jose was in a salary dump situation. That's fine, but I look at the player you missed on. And there's been too much of that around here, and I don't think there's been enough accountability in terms of their drafting. I mean, they've made some decent decisions at the pro ranks in terms of some of their pro scouting and maybe unearthing, you know, college free agents and things of that nature. But you can't build a team that way. You get lucky, or you might claim a guy off waivers, like a Ryan Stanton, who's played well on the back end on the third pairing. But those don't happen very often. And, you know, the back end hasn't been a problem for the Canucks, but they've got all kinds of problems up front.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, talking about the Canucks. Ben, you just mentioned the back end and how it hasn't been the problem for the Canucks. It's been, you know, going pretty well. In your opinion, who's been the best of the defensemen so far this season?
Well, that's a great question, because you know, a guy like Danny Hamhuis, who was on the, you know, the Olympic team radar at the orientation camp, really struggled with John Tortorella's kind of a zone system that they played defensively. And he got off to a horrific start. And, you know, the guys who were the best were the guys who were quiet and playing a quiet game, Chris Tanev and even Stanton. You know, Jason Garrison got off to a decent start, but now he can't score. And I think the problem that the Canucks are having now, the scoring has dried up from the back end. You know, they've gone back to a more traditional set, the two-point men on the power play. But getting pucks through has been a real problem. I mean, Garrison hasn't scored in 20 games, and he's got such a heavy shot. But, you know, that doesn't matter today because teams defend so well. Guys are really clogging up the lanes. They got sticks in the lanes. And you kind of got to move laterally really smartly, maybe even get off a good wrist or half a slapper and get pucks to the net. And they haven't been able to do that from the point, and that's really killing him. But in terms of, I guess, nobody has... You know, I'm not naming anybody per se because I think collectively they played pretty well. Kevin Bieksa has, you know, really thrived with Tortorella's green light system where, you know, he's got the happy feet and he's more than willing to lead the rush half the time and they're encouraged to pinch because they want to turn pucks over in the offensive zone. But, you know, that's a high risk, high reward kind of way to play. They give up a lot of odd man rushes and they're supposed to get back into play. Again, it takes a lot out of these guys, but the back end has been good, and that hasn't been the problem.
Ben, now that we can have you on the show and we don't have to talk about Corey Schneider versus Roberto Luongo, and we know that Roberto Luongo is the number one goalie and Eddie Lack is clearly clearly his backup, as far as this team goes and their ability to get into the playoffs and maybe make some hay in the playoffs, can Luongo do that for this team? Is it reasonable to think that he can steal them some games and get them past the first round of the playoffs?
Well, he hasn't been the problem, you know, on this losing streak. I mean, when you're giving up two goals a night, usually the goaltender's making saves more often than not. I think that what works for them here is they've got 17 back-to-backs, and they've got a backup goalie in Eddie Lack who is coming off hip surgery last January. You kind of got to work him back into the mix, and he'll probably play Friday night here against Columbus because Chicago's here Saturday night, and you're going to give along with the Hockey Night in Canada game. So that works. You know, Lack's demeanor also works. I mean, he's a competitive guy, but he's also a fun-loving guy, and I just think he's wired the right way to back up somebody like Roberto who's going to get, you know, 65 starts. So they seem to work well together, and I think Luongo's game is solid. It hasn't been a problem, and it's interesting to see. We know he's motivated by, you know, the Olympic carrot that's dangling there, and hoping to be on that team. So that's helped him get off to one of his best starts in October, and he's been able to carry it over.
Final question, Ben. You know, obviously Tortorella comes into much media attention. What's been the difference, you know, just covering the team, what's been the biggest difference for you with Tortorella versus Vigneault?
Well, I think, you know, nothing against Elaine. I mean, I like Elaine. He's a great guy. But I just think, you know, over time, 7 years, you know, a lot of the responses became quite vanilla. And it was kind of like Groundhog Day. With John Tortorella, he's straightforward. He's honest. He's to the point. He doesn't play mind games with you. You ask a good question, you get a better answer. You ask a dumb question, he'll kind of look at you funny. But I'm really enjoying the interaction with him. And I think the media is per se. So he's been a breath of fresh air for the players and certainly for us, too. And let me put it to you this way. You don't miss a game day skate or you don't miss a practice or you don't miss a post-game scrum because he's always got something to say.
Much like John Tortorella, you always have something to say as well, Ben. We appreciate it. Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, thanks very much for joining us on the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Take care, Ben. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Ben Kuzma for having just joined us here on NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. You look around this room and it's obvious that with those mustaches being sported by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg that we are active participants in Movember.
Yeah, by the way, can you plug our Movember fundraising?
Of course. Yeah. We'll plug our Movember. Go to Movember, I believe it's CA, just .movember.com. Go to the Movember Canada page.
Tweet it out.
I'll tweet it out as well. Just search for Team Illegal Curve.
Yep.
And you can also donate to, if you want to donate to your favorite Illegal Curve member between Dave, Richard, and Ezra, or if you just want to make a donation, a general donation to the entire team, you can do that. We're up over $1,000, so we thank everybody.
Close to $2,000.
Close to $2,000 raised in the name of Illegal Curve, and we thank everybody for their generous contributions. Not Remus. He hasn't donated a penny yet. But we thank everybody else who has donated to the Illegal Curve Movember team.
Yeah, and the guy sitting beside me, Richard Pollock, first year doing Movember, he's killing us right now, which is a good thing because all money goes to Team Illegal Curve and ultimately Movember Winnipeg. But yeah, we're almost at $2,000 and we have a lot of time left. And we thank everybody who's not just donating to us, but supporting this awesome month.
And speaking of awesome month and awesome events, this coming Wednesday, next Wednesday, there is no NHL midweek because the Jets are playing in Long Island. So midweek is on Tuesday next week. But next Wednesday at our newest sponsor, the Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner on McMillan Avenue, we're hosting a Movember event there. It's called Snap the Stash.
We're very excited about this. We've got Movember Winnipeg involved. And as you mentioned, Drew, the event is called Snap the Stash. Next Wednesday, November 27th, starting at 6 p.m., we're doing this in association with Movember Winnipeg. We're going to have ticket giveaways. We're going to give away a pair of tickets. We're going to have drink giveaways. We're going to be giving away tickets to the Movember Gala Party, which is the last day of the month, Saturday, November 30th. We're really excited. We're all going to be out there. We're promoting this. Hopefully we can tweet it out before the show ends.
I'm doing it right now.
And, you know, it's all about coming out. And the whole idea is to celebrate all the people that have put in a hard-working effort, because at that point there's only going to be a few days left in Movember. But you can come even if you're not participating in Movember. It's just all about having a good time.
So I'm allowed to come.
Of course you're allowed to come. Okay. And we welcome everybody who wants to come out to our new sponsor, Chill Barn Grill. They've been really good. We're going to be, you know, watching the game on Wednesday night. So if you can come out, definitely come out. I think it's going to be lots of fun.
I couldn't agree with you more there. So that's next Wednesday. You'll hear more information about it on illegalcurve.com and, of course, via our Twitter feed. But that's next Wednesday, 6 p.m. The Illegal Curve presents Snap the Stash in support of Movember Winnipeg at Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner.
And we'll be on Tuesday next week.
Exactly. Tuesday night next week, the Jets start their six-game, 14-day road trip. So it's a long road trip, but it's not an especially burdensome road trip there. They play Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So they're Monday in New Jersey, Wednesday on Long Island, and Friday in Philly. That Friday game, of course, being the Black Friday, 10:30 a.m. local time start, which is going to screw up everybody, I suspect.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the road trip, Richie. They've got Chicago tomorrow, and then Saturday afternoon they've got the Wild again. So, you know, this will be six games against the Wild and the Hawks by the time Saturday's game is over. And if you can pick up a win against either one of these teams, especially Chicago, then you're not looking too bad. But if you're unable to get at least a couple points out of these next games, then you're really putting yourself in a situation where you almost have to win minimum 5 of 6 games to put yourself back to where you were, because the Jets were able to pick up 4 wins. They beat the Red Wings a couple times. And, you know, after they lost the point, because let's be honest, you get a point by taking it to the shootout, but then you lose the point by not getting...
You're talking about against Calgary.
Against Calgary. So you really got to get some points here. You need a clean win against Minnesota or Chicago, because as you mentioned, Drew, you're going to go into Philly, you're going to go into New Jersey, you're going to go into the Islanders, and, you know, these teams are decent teams, but these are beatable teams. The Jets can beat they can beat these teams. It's not like you're facing the top teams in the league. And Philly started to play well lately, but the Jets took Philly to the brink. They could have easily have won that game.
They did win that game.
Oh, pardon me, they did win that game. I forget. There's so many hockey games going on. They did win that game, so they should be able to beat Philly. Sorry, and you know they should be able to stick in it. But if they lose these next two home games, then you're putting yourself in a situation where you got to win 5 of 6, or maybe even 6 of 6.
Our buddy Rick Ralph has been doing a great job documenting, on the roundtable, each day. You know, he's looking at the Central Division teams, and he's looking at, the Minnesota Wild go 8-1-1, and they gain 1 point in the standings. The St. Louis Blues go 7-2-1, and they gain 2 points in the standings. Whatever it is, it's just going to and we talked about it, I believe, on Saturday's show. You know, the Jets need a 8-1-1 run themselves to get back into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't afford these, to go 5-5 over the next 10 games, or 4-5-1, or 5-4-1. Yep. You know, to keep pace with these teams in the Central Division that are just absolutely dominating, they need to go on almost a month-long run that sees them play, if they play, 17, 18 games in a month, they need to go on a 14-3-1 run. Well, I don't believe this team has it in them.
At the very minimum, Drew, I mean, it's either that or you play at a 65% clip for the rest of the season. So I agree with what you're saying. At some point, it has to equalize. And the Jets cannot play 500 hockey. They can't play 550 hockey. They're going to have to play way above 600 hockey because of how good the Western Conference is. You asked us, you know, at the beginning of the show what we thought about the Western Conference. And I think it's obvious to anyone who looks at the standings right now that it's going to be difficult for a team like the St. Louis Blues to finish in the top four in the Western Conference. And we all agreed that they're probably the second best team in this division. Minnesota Wild are playing pretty well right now.
Colorado.
Colorado. I mean, there's four really good teams in the Central. So the Jets aren't going to win it, aren't going to get in, with a 5-5 record or whatever you want to call it with 60 games left or so, a 30-30 record. So they will have to go on some type of really good winning streak.
The sobering stat to me, I bring it up every show because I want to update the listeners, and the Jets have won 21% of their games in regulation and overtime.
Sure.
I mean, that's true. 21% of their games. So if you go to a game, you have a 1-5 shot of seeing the team win regulation overtime. It's not going to be good enough.
Right,
so.
Rich. And I bet if you look at the teams that are above the Jets that are competing for those last two spots, I bet their percentage of regulation wins are a lot higher. Because you look at the St. Louis Blues, I think they've played 3 or 4 less games than the Jets.
They've played 3 less, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the St. Louis Blues, they got the games in hand. It's going to be tough, but I think, again, I'm an optimist. I do think that there's still a good chance. And again, I hope, by the way, that we don't start pulling out these 5% chance to make the playoffs numbers this early.
Mm. You mean,
that stuff. You can pull that stuff out, maybe 50 games into the season.
Well,
we're 21, 22 games into the season. They got to win some games here, and then we can talk about their chances of making the playoffs.
We haven't addressed the Calgary game. If this team is serious about making the playoffs, they have to stop sleepwalking through the first and second. First they played all right to the second period. They have to stop sleepwalking through whole periods.
Sure.
And take the bull by the horns. I think that's pretty simple. And again, I think that gets down to focus and leadership and things that have been to me an issue for quite a while now. You don't sleepwalk through games and rely on crazy comebacks with 8 seconds left or absolutely amazing performances by a guy like Dustin Byfuglien. Like, that's one guy who's doing it, but the rest of the guys aren't. And sure. you can't get by that way, and you're not going to make the playoffs that way.
And we've seen them play the Hawks twice this year, Drew,
yeah.
And the game's been over very quickly in both games.
Right, and I don't think the Jets are going to end up missing the playoffs by 2 points. I think it's going to be more than that, but you can certainly say that, I mean, you can... that performance against Calgary... say that again?
You've completely eliminated the possibility of them making the playoffs. You have no... You don't even have a little...
Let me put a tiny bit
of hope.
You talked about you don't want to hear about the 5% stats and everything else.
What's the stat?
I don't know what the stat is, but I would give them about a 5% chance to make the playoffs.
I guarantee you a couple weeks from now, we're going to see that the Jets have a 6% chance of making the playoffs, and then someone's going to update it to 5.6, 6.1, and it's... I mean...
I know, it's ridiculous,
it gets a little ridiculous.
I just look at this division, I look at how the team's been playing, and I was saying that they need a 14-2-1 run or something over the course of a month, and I have trouble believing that this team has it in them. Now, I'd be happy to be proven wrong.
I'll put it to you this way. If that run's coming, it's going to be on the back of Andrei Pavlik. 100%.
Yep.
That's what it's going to be. He's going to shut the door. If they're going to make a run like that, he's going to have to shut the door for basically a whole month and just play out of his mind. That's what it's going to be. Otherwise, I just don't see it happening.
Right, and if you look at all of the teams that are playing well, we mentioned Josh Harding and six things we learned this week. You look at Halak and Elliott and St. Louis. You look at Ben Scrivens coming in for the injured Jonathan Quick. There isn't one single team that's gone on a run in either conference that isn't getting good goaltending. And so far, Andrei Pavlik, I would say, has been pretty good, but he struggled at times. So, I mean, and this is, as we've talked about before, this is a big year for him, right? I mean, this is a the lockout season notwithstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is his opportunity to show that he can take a team into the playoffs because he's on a long contract with three years after this year. So it's a big year for him to prove himself as kind of in that upper echelon of goaltenders.
I agree. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly thereafter.
Well, Remus just took us back to 1999 with Nelly.
That's okay. I like this. It's better than some of the other electronic dance music we were playing earlier. So I'm okay with this, all things considered.
It's called Ride With Me.
Ezzy, this is your final segment on today's show. Is that what I understand?
Well, yeah, guys. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be around for the last segment. I'll be doing Mo Yoga tonight.
With
Mo Yoga with Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. We're going to be doing yoga at Yoga Public. And it's in support of Movember. It's Movember Yoga, Mo Yoga, right?
Sure.
So I've decided to, you know,
I want to put
the Lululemon pants on and, you know, rock and roll, Drew.
I want to get an expert on here to talk about this.
We welcome to NHL Midweek. She's the manager at Yoga Public, Samantha Globerman. Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys
what?
Doing?
What? You got Sam on the line?
We're doing well.
I thought you were joking.
No, we're serious.
No, we're not joking.
Sam, we have a first question for you. We want to make sure that Ezra... we want to make sure Ezra can partake tonight. Is there a weight restriction for tonight's class?
I hate you, Richie. This is all designed by Richie. Richie, for sure, texted you, Sam, during the day and organized this. He told me he was up to something.
Sam, how easy, for example, Ezzy's never done yoga before, and we want to get him into it. How easy is this class tonight?
This actually is a very good class. It's just a nice stretch and relaxation class. He'll be just fine.
Sam, is there going to be like any type of food and drinks served?
Well, usually we put a nice lemon cloth on your forehead to cool you down, but try not to like lick it or anything. It's not to eat, it's not to drink.
Yeah, like don't squeeze the lemon cloth.
Are there girls allowed in this class?
Yes, except for I told them to spread out a little bit further away from Ezzy so that there's no distraction.
Right. Well, I understand that, but I was hoping that there'd be some women. Like, I didn't want it to be like, you know, sausage yoga. You know what I mean?
So another question I have is, you know, the showers at Yoga. Yoga Public is a beautiful facility. The showers at Yoga Public are incredible. We've talked about it on this show before. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a personal assistant to show Ezra how to use the shower?
Well, I can send somebody in to show him how to use it. It definitely won't be one of the lovely yoga teachers, but maybe our front desk staff, Philip.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Ezzy's being wheeled into the yoga room like Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs?
I hope not. I think it'll be just fine.
Sam, I know you're obviously... you work at Yoga Public. Is this like hot yoga or like what type of yoga is it? Because I actually have no idea. I haven't exercised in 3 years.
It is hot yoga.
Oh,
so
yoga's great.
So prepare yourself. I think you'll be just fine.
Do I need my own yoga mat, Sam?
No, you do not. We give those to you free of charge.
I actually heard someone
told... You've been stressed about that,
someone, yeah, yeah, someone... Like, would it be okay if like maybe we just put like some pizza boxes out and that's, that's what I'll use as my yoga mat?
No.
Okay.
Sam, jokes aside, before we let you go, where can people find Yoga Public?
Check us out on our website, yogapublic.com, and check out the class schedule and try us out with our 2-week pass. It's only $35, and we expect to see all Illegal Curve guys there this week. If Ezzy's doing it, you guys can do it, and bring friends.
Sam, I just want to say something. I promise I won't let you down. I won't embarrass you. I'm going to take it really seriously, and I'll let you know how it goes, because I know it's going to be lots of fun.
Well, we actually really appreciate it, Ezzy. This class is also, all the funds from this class, it's Karma class, are also going to Movember. So
nice.
Thank you for your support.
Excellent. Sam Globerman from Yoga Public. Sam, thanks very much for joining us. And
my pleasure.
God help you for dealing with Ezzy in about 25 minutes' time.
Looking forward.
We sprung that. I'll give full credit to Richard Pollock on that
one.
That's
your music in the background.
Yeah, come on.
I thought Sam was sitting in a room with music.
No, it's yoga music.
Where did you get that music? Did you just Google or YouTube yoga music?
No.
So is that your personal collection?
Yeah, I mean,
I can't wait for the review of this class.
Is Remus going to do yoga for the final segment while I'm doing yoga at Yoga Public?
You got to get off the segment right now. What are we talking about here, Drew?
I'm doing downward dog.
Well, I usually do hot dogs, so that's better.
The Red Wings placed Danny DeKeyser on long-term injury reserve earlier today. He's going to be out at least until the middle of December. Red Wings are, I mean, they've been gaining some points lately, but they're really struggling. They've lost 7 in a row.
Yeah, you know, Drew, they kind of look a little stale right now.
Yep.
And... I don't know if it's an age thing. I mean, you mentioned DeKeyser. DeKeyser's a youngster, right? I mean, he's a guy they signed last year. And a great signing, great job there by Kenny Holland. But they kind of look a little stale. They're going to apparently sign Jonathan Erickson to an extension, which I think is a good move. But because they're in the Eastern Conference, because they have a great coach, because they have a bunch of guys who know how to put it together, and because of last year's run, when in reality people didn't have any expectations for them, I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about.
What about Jonathan Quick? Going to miss another month. Dean Lombardi announced that earlier today.
To that point, Drew, about the Jonathan Quick issue, he has a grade two groin injury, which is similar to Bogosian. So when I'm, the Jets aren't going to tell us.
Good luck.
November. When the Jets don't really tell us when Bogosian's going to be out for, everybody reacts differently, of course. But, when you hear week to week, I look at that first from a Winnipeg perspective of, is Bogosian out till past December? Because that's a huge loss, because he's a huge part of this team. In terms of Quick, sure. I mean, Jonathan Quick is an incredible goaltender. He won't rush back, I think, A, because of the Kings and the Western Conference is so hard to make the playoffs in. Two, because I think he wants to be the starter for the U.S., of course.
Sure.
But the way the Kings play, the size of the team, the defensive ability, defensive awareness the whole squad exhibits, and the coach Daryl Sutter, I think, Ben Scrivens can be it, and he's played well. He can be a solid fill-in for this period of time, but I don't think any longer than that. And you don't want to fall, again, too far behind him. This isn't 2 years ago when the Kings squeeze into eighth. The West was good then, but the West is especially good this year.
Right. Two teams that really, I think, people had a lot of high hopes for, and we mentioned them earlier. One of them being the Islanders after they took Pittsburgh to six games in the first round last year. Playoff team. I think people thought this is a team on the up and up. The another team, they didn't quite qualify for the playoffs last year, but, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yeah. They had Bobrovsky, who won the Vezina. People also thought, those two teams, they're on the up in the Eastern Conference, in a terrible Eastern Conference this year. Last night, the Blue Jackets lose 7-0 to the Edmonton Oilers. The Islanders lose 5-2 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Both teams held closed-door players-only meetings after each game. Which of those two teams are you more surprised with their poor start?
The Islanders, because they have higher, they have better high-end talent. And John Tavares, obviously they had Molson, the Vanek, and the injury and such now, but Franz Nielsen's been great. They have a Kaposo. Mm-hmm. Grabner's been awful this year.
Well, he was a healthy scratch against the Leafs.
Yeah, but he's been awful this year. But I'm talking high talent. They have talent. Hamonic, they have talent.
Sure.
And Columbus has talent too. And I know they have a Gabrick injury now, which is significant, but he wasn't playing that well before the injury.
That's right.
But Columbus is more of a collective kind of effort there. So I'm more surprised, and of course the Vishnovsky injury we didn't mention as well in terms of the Islanders. So they both have their fair share of injuries, but so do the Jets, so do every team. DeKaiser, every team's got injuries. That's why the excuse doesn't really work. Look at Tampa Bay without Stamkos. The Islanders surprised me more, but the thing about the Eastern Conference, we keep going back to it, the Islanders are 1 point out of third place in the division, and the Columbus Blue Jackets are 3 points. I don't think there's really a discernible difference between... I mean, I know that Washington in second place, I think they're a fraud for the most part. I don't really think there's a discernible difference between anybody 2 through 8 in the Metropolitan Division. I don't.
You mentioned the Islanders. I mean, they're scoring 63 goals for so far this year.
Well, the other problem is, Vishnovsky helps, obviously, the transition game, which helps offense, which helps prevent goals, which is an issue. But the other issue they have is, on the back end, they're a little thin. And that's why when you have the goaltender, it makes up for the lack of the defense. Unless you want to go get both. But you just sacrifice an asset to get Vanek. Again, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are holes to fill, and they do have some assets. I mean, they still have a bunch of guys, whether it be Reinhardt, whether it be Strom, if people still have hopes for a guy like Calvin DeHaan, they still have prospects to deal. But they dealt a prospect in Niederreiter. They dealt draft picks in the Vanek trade. So they are depleting that resource a bit.
Sure. I mean, they're because they wanted to win now. That's why they made the Vanek trade. They weren't, but they thought that their ceiling was there.
That's fine. But you just didn't address the right issue.
Sure. Their offense, like I said, it hasn't been the problem. And I don't think it was the problem beforehand. But, you look at the goaltending situation, and like you said, and there's goaltenders available. I mean, you can't tell me that, Matt Molson in the first and the second you gave up wasn't going to get you probably Ryan Miller.
Yeah, you can't tell me that somebody in Anaheim isn't available.
Yeah, I mean, they just had to send down, Frederick Anderson, because there's no room for him there. I mean, so there's certainly players available. It just seems like you said, Garth Snow seems to have addressed the wrong issue there in New York.
Yeah, he kind of went Ryan Smith on the deal. It just didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I know Grant ran to that trade. He traded a bunch of guys who never turned out, but... it doesn't always happen that way. You don't know what those picks will be. And by the way, if the Islanders keep tanking, the
Buffalo trade looks great.
Yeah,
I mean, they keep struggling, and it just looks like to be...
Now, it is protected, granted, but still.
It's protected, but it's not going to be that high.
And it's not a good draft this year.
Yeah, well, it's not next year.
If you're going to be bad,
be bad next year.
Sure. Right. Well, with the Connor McDavid draft.
Yeah.
This isn't hockey related, but before we go to break, news coming out of baseball, it appears as though the Texas Rangers have traded second baseman Ian Kinsler to the Detroit Tigers in exchange for Prince Fielder. So that's a pretty sizable trade, not pardon the pun, given the size of Prince Fielder. But the Rangers trading Ian Kinsler to the Detroit Tigers and Prince Fielder on his way to the Texas Rangers.
It's a big trade. Remus, Remus been texting about that during the show.
Yeah, well, this will move Cabrera probably to first base and make their Tigers infield that much better, and allows the Rangers to bring up Jurickson Profar, a huge prospect. But there's a lot of money getting, you know, there's a lot of money owed, more is owed to Fielder than Kinsler.
Oh, yeah.
So the Tigers are actually saving a few dollars here.
And I know it's early, but if he plays like he did at the end of last year, going through the end of his career,
yeah,
that ain't good.
Yeah, I mean, a player like Prince Fielder isn't going to age. I mean, look at how Ryan Howard has been doing lately for Philadelphia. Not that good.
The one benefit he has, although Howard has his benefit too, is playing in a hitter's park now.
Sure.
Right, and the DH is also in.
But from the Detroit Tigers' perspective, I mean, their defense was atrocious last year because you had Fielder and you had Cabrera both in the infield. But like you said, this, you know, really does solve. I mean, you know, Ian Kinsler doesn't have the bat that Prince Fielder does, but he has a pretty decent bat. And is the upgrade on the defense side is almost, it seems to make it quite worth it for a Tigers team probably poised to be really competitive again next year.
Yeah, all they need is a closer now.
Yeah. You don't pay for saves. You don't pay for saves in fantasy. You don't pay for saves in baseball.
It's true.
Oh, Drew. Getting philosophical on us.
Just call me Jonah Carey. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I was going to say, have you ever done karaoke to Thunder Road?
Oh, God. Of course I've done karaoke to Thunder Road. Everybody does karaoke to Thunder Road. This is a... Bruce songs are hard to do karaoke to. My preference is Dancing in the Dark, but Born to Run is especially hard. It seems easy when you just get into it, but, I mean, it's very difficult, the speed and such. I'm no music expert, though, but I have to say...
Let me interrupt you for a second. No music expert. You got a guitar for your birthday. How's that going?
I have to get into it yet. I still, you know, it's been busy with the schedule, but...
February. February is wide open.
February is wide open. I'll play while watching Finland against Germany.
at 4 in the morning. your neighbors will appreciate it.
Yeah, they won't mind. You know, we always give Remus our time. I think Remus has been spotless tonight.
He's been pretty good. He was able to count to six in six things.
Mm-hmm.
He coordinated the phone interview with Samantha without Ezzy finding out about it. Although when you were out of the room,
I heard about that.
Getting drinks, Remus almost gave it away, but we covered it for you.
First of all, I was texted that she was coming on, and I was like, oh really? I looked at the show plan. It wasn't the show plan. So as Drew in a break, it was she coming on, and then you're like, no.
Something well, like, no, I just pretended like I don't know what you're talking about.
Then I figured it out after.
Yeah, because we don't want Ezzy to know about it. But
right.
By the way, I assume Ezzy's not going to be on Saturday's show. He's going to be in Traction or something.
yeah, he's not going to hold the move after.
No, there's no way.
Yeah. Actually, what he's going to do. He's going to fall asleep.
Well, I'm concerned that he's not going to be able to move his body to be able to do any of the poses.
Well,
he's going to be that guy who just lays there and doesn't do anything.
Yeah. A lot of guys who take those who take the moves off. Right?
I thought it was regular yoga, so I was like, it won't be a problem. But it's hot yoga. Oh, he's not even going to be able to.
I'll tell you what,
seconds.
Michael. Hashtag Leah, and you went to yoga not that long ago.
And
so you've become a bit of an aficionado.
Apparently, I'm pretty good at it.
I'm not following up with any other questions. there,
I'm not touching that one with the radio mic.
Yeah, how about we just do rapid fire instead? I think that's less potential for trouble there.
Rapid fire.
After his slow start to the season, Claude Giroux has picked things up as of late and is showing flashes of the Giroux of old. According to Dan Rosen of NHL.com, Giroux says that a text message from old teammate Mike Richards helped him settle down and relax in the midst of the slump. Do you have any problem with a player from one team lending to support to a struggling player on a different team?
No. Good friends, played together, went to the Cup together. Similar in that they're centers with big-time expectations who have obviously Richards having experienced that pressure in Philadelphia. I have no issue with that at all, Drew. I mean, friends, you know, if you leave a workplace and go to another workplace, you're still friends with the person at the old workplace? Of course.
I don't know. None of the people I work with want to be friends with me.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, yes, you don't have that problem, but I mean, there are. I have no issue with it at all, and I think it helps, and I think it kind of lends it. You know, it really shows you Mike Richards' effect in terms of where he's been and how he can give advice to people who are accomplished. I mean, Claude Giroux posted serious offensive numbers in the league, better numbers than Mike Richards, but Mike Richards is still the leader and the guy who's won the cup and won the Olympic gold medal and won the world. He's won everything. Mm-hmm. He's a winner, right? So
yeah, he's come a long way from the guy getting criticized in the Philly dressing room for the dry island stuff
too.
He's now
that, and he won a Calder Cup too.
Yeah, he's now one of the consummate leaders in the NHL. I mean, if you were going to pick a team of, you know, your best captains in the NHL, the best leaders, Mike Richards is on that list.
Mm-hmm. He'll be in the Olympics.
Yeah, certainly it will be. Lots of talk in Ottawa tonight about Danny Heatley and Matt Cook returning to the nation's capital for tonight's game. For the Senators playing the Minnesota Wild. We're watching it on TSN right now. Mm-hmm. Both players have returned to Ottawa since becoming public enemies to Senators fans. Heatley for demanding a trade and Cook for slicing the leg of Senators defenseman Erik Karlsson. Which of the two players will get booed more? And are you surprised that such animosity still exists?
Not really. Cook sliced Carlson's leg, whether or not you think it's intentional or not. I don't like Matt Cook. I think he's quote-unquote changed guy, but ask Mark Savard about his whole career being changed by Matt Cook playing like an idiot. But I don't know if I think that was intentional. I don't think it was. In terms of Danny Heatley, well, first off, I mean, they should probably thank him because he's done. Watch Danny Heatley play. Michael Russo was on with us on Hustler and Lawless on Sunday with Huss and I, and it basically says it's done. I mean, he can't skate. So at the long term, you know, Milan Mihalik has had more productive years. But, I mean, obviously short term, Healy was very good there. But I think Healy's the one that bothers me more because he whined his way out of town. And
then kiboshed the first trade.
Yeah, to Edmonton, right? And for a guy who, to me, I'll put it this way. Danny Heatley, you know, for who they gave up for him, Hossa and the money and all that stuff, that guy should have sucked it up.
Especially because they saved him from an ugly situation in Atlanta at that point.
I just thought I'd mention, Healy got booed more, and he also did score a goal tonight.
That's amazing. I'm shocked he was on the ice enough to score a goal.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And to get booed.
Michael Russo mentioned also that, you know, when he's playing with their second line, the line hasn't done anything. He's been on the fourth line for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we're on the air, so it's been hard to keep track here, and obviously we don't have the sound on because that'd be weird for being on the radio. But Minnesota is up 3-2 halfway through the game.
Last night in Vancouver, we talked to Ben Kuzma. Tim Thomas backstopped the Florida Panthers to a shootout victory over the Canucks and goaltender Roberto Luongo. It was Thomas's first game in Vancouver since the Game 7 Stanley Cup victory for the Boston Bruins over the Canucks. Which goaltender, Tim Thomas or Roberto Luongo, has seen their career go more haywire since that Stanley Cup deciding game?
You know, I read that question in the show plan, Drew. It's a really good question. It is, because, I mean, Tim Thomas kind of gone haywire, really, in terms of what he's done in the year off. And by the way, he would be a good fit in the island. Like, you know, they had him before. He would be a good fit. But what Luongo went through in terms of the rumors and the trades and no trades, the trade deadline, they've had such odd careers since that point. It's still Thomas, but it's pretty close. And by the way, Tim Thomas, for all it's said about him, I know he's had groin injuries and he's older. He took a year off. He can still play net.
Yeah.
If Tim Thomas can stay healthy, which is a big if, he can help somebody down the stretch.
Last one, it was announced this week that a new TV show is going to debut in the new year, providing NHL fans with an up-close, all-access look at some of their favorite stars as those players prepare for the NHL Stadium Series and Heritage Classic. You might as well call this show the junior version of the acclaimed NHL 24/7 series. Mm-hmm. Given this miniature version and the 400 outdoor games happening this year, what in the NHL is next to be watered down and overexposed?
Well, you know, it's a good question, but I think already the inner workings of these teams is a little bit, I won't say overexposed, but, you know, the Habs have their one, the Edmonton has their one. To your point, I think right now they're still pretty good. I actually do enjoy watching them, but I do agree with you in terms of the watering it down, because the more you show, the less you show.
Sure.
You know what I mean? The more information you get into the room, eventually the more they curb that. So, yeah, I have some concerns. I still like these shows, though, but I do have concerns of what it will come to later on.
That's it for tonight and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. A couple of programming notes. First of all, next Tuesday, 6 p.m. for NHL Midweek. Note the special day, Tuesday instead of Wednesday, as the Jets play their second and final Wednesday game of the season next Wednesday. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, 8 a.m. start with the 2 o'clock Jets start.
Don't you just picture Ezzy, like, when Elaine can't get up because of her back?
Yeah.
Ezzy in Saturday morning with the yoga being like,
Exactly, just frozen in time. I mean, it's going to be... We'll give an update on Ezzy's condition later on, of course. Big thank you to our guests, Adrian O'Coyne and Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes. It'll also be available on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We thank you for listening, and we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.